I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Babylon Rolling is the newest novel from the author Amanda Boyden. It is a novel about five families, black, white, and Indian, living in New Orleans, following them for a year, the year before Hurricane Katrina. The book has been described as brave and seductive, glittering and gritty. It looks at race and culture in New Orleans and more. The author with her husband, the writer Joseph Boyden, lives in New Orleans, where she is a writer in residence at the University of New Orleans. Her first novel was the acclaimed Pretty Little Dirty. Babylon Rolling is published by Knopf and retails for $29.95. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program Amanda Boyden. Good morning, Mrs. Boyden.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell me about these characters. Let's begin with Ariel and Ed.
Ariel and Ed are transplants of sorts. They've only been in New Orleans for about a year in the novel, and they are still making their way around all of the local customs and not doing such a good job of it, but it does provide a reader with an outsider's perspective, so it's sort of a way in to learn the city with the characters.
Now, they're from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You were born in Minnesota.
I was born in Minnesota, but I didn't live there, I think, much past my third month of life. But I do have family still who, they live in the Minneapolis area, so part of the world I know.
Yeah, did you feel like Ariel and Ed when you moved to New Orleans?
I did so much, it's not funny. I had never actually traveled to New Orleans for Mardi Gras or anything else, until I moved there for graduate school. And what was so funny is that I thought that Mardi Gras was a place you went to, much like going to Disneyland. You go to Mardi Gras.
Right.
So I had a lot to learn when I first moved to the city.
And how long ago was that when you first went there?
It was 92.
And Cerise, she is another character in the book. She's an older woman. She's black.
Yeah,
in her 70s.
She's in her mid-70s. And it feels herself to be very, very special in that she still has a husband and they've been married all these years. So she's newly and old in love with her husband. And she's sort of the watcher of the block. So many of these characters are sort of flawed. They're imperfect characters. And I knew I needed at least one who was really just essentially quite good and somebody who might give a sense of calm, a bit of rest for the reader too, since all of the other ones are so messed up in a number of things. So she unfortunately though, Cerise is in a terrible accident at the beginning of the novel and has both of her hands badly burned. So she is on a recovery course for most of the novel, but one of the East Indian characters, one of the Guptas, says that she will be essentially a child all over again because she had all of the lines on her hands will be erased. So if a palm reader were to look at them, she would be born again of sorts. So.
And then there's Furious. He's 15 years old.
Yes, my 15-year-old thug of a drug dealer just out of juvie. And he was probably the most fun to write. He's not up to much good, certainly, but it was sort of a mission of mine to try to have the average reader come to care about him by the end of the novel.
Prancy
she's an is older... my nutball. She's in her 50s, and her full name is Philomena Beauregard de Bruges, so I think the name alone says something about her.
Right.
But she's actually, she too is very imperfect and quite flawed, and does some rather horrible things over the course of the novel, but I also was hoping that I could convince a reader to feel sympathy for her by the end.
Well, was it hard for you, because these characters are so disparate, to sort of, I don't know, to maintain focus perhaps, or not maintain focus, but sort of have an idea of the story you were telling or the where you were going with the story?
I knew where it would end, the sort of climactic scene. I knew what would happen, but I didn't know how it would happen. And I know it's probably become a bit of a cliche. Most writers say, oh, well, I just let my characters take me there. You know, they sort of take over and write themselves. But I had a number of plot points, and I just didn't know how I would move the characters from L to M or P to O, you know, O to P. And they, I feel like I knew them they became such a part of me that they actually did do the directing to some degree.
Well, one of the reviews I've read of the book compared it to Peyton Place. I've never read it or even seen the film, but so what did you get from Peyton Place that helped you in writing this book?
Well, I reread Peyton Place a number of years ago and really sort of enjoyed the community telling. It's a story about a small town and on the East Coast, but that sort of multi-narrator approach, I thought, was an ensemble cast, I guess you could say, really interested me because it reflects on the community as a whole as well, too. So you're not just telling the story of each individual character, you're commenting on what they build between all of them. And I, since I started this novel post-Katrina, I set down the first pages when my husband and I, Joseph, were evacuated in Toronto, looking back at a city that I knew would never be the same, and I didn't know if it would recover at all. So it was my swan song of sorts, but I wanted this novel to be about the city of New Orleans as much as it was about the people who live there. So I think that New Orleans itself becomes a bit of it is a character in the novel.
And I guess you couldn't have told the story just through one narrator. You wouldn't have gotten a sense of the city.
Exactly. And the city belongs to certainly more than one type of person as well. You know, we are a mixed bag of people, to be sure. And I knew that my characters needed to sort of reflect that as well. So hence the uppity white woman, uptown uppity white woman, and the thug of a drug dealer, and our face, there isn't a singular face of New Orleans.
You talked about having a mixed bag of people there. You have different people,
mm-hmm.
and we invariably come to the subject of race.
Right.
What do you think your book says about race and what it's like living in New Orleans?
New Orleanians sort of pride themselves on being relatively progressive race-wise compared to much of the rest of the states, if only because they have been more accepting of African Americans for a long time. The various historical, what a quadroon was, to in the city and what he or she was permitted to do, etc. But I don't know. I don't think that the race relations in New Orleans are very good, and I certainly don't have any answers as to what to do about that, except to open up a discussion and to try to open up not just our city's eyes, but the state, all of the states, that racism still exists. It's still a problem, and we have to get beyond that. And so I'm happy to talk about it. I don't have answers, but I did want to show any reader who actually opened the pages of my book that it's still there, and we still need to do something about it.
And living there and having lived there for a long time, is it something that you see every day or something that you feel? I mean, I live in Vancouver, so I don't really, maybe I don't think about it as much. Is it something that you think about?
I do, in that, I think what racism exists in New Orleans is so, it's culturally linked as well, and economically. I would be lying if I said that I didn't think that most of the poor people in New Orleans were black. It's true. They are. And so I think it's an issue of education as much as anything. And we in New Orleans still need help. We didn't get all the money that we were promised after Katrina. And education in particular has really suffered. Most of the schools are not back. How are we supposed to get families to return to our city when the kids don't have any place to go to school?
After Katrina, we sort of, we paid a lot of attention towards it. We had people, like Brian Williams and Anderson Cooper sort of telling us on television that we needed to pay attention to it,
mm-hmm.
and that they themselves, the two of them in particular, would focus attention on it. Do you think we've come away from that because it's been a certain time has passed now?
Oh, of course. And I think, too, that there's Katrina fatigue. I think people are really just tired of hearing about New Orleans. It's similar to what happened after 9/11. Okay, you know, get on with it, move on. You know, we don't have any other choice but to keep living life. So enough already. You know, New Orleans, pick yourself up by the bootstraps. The problem is we don't really have much in the way of bootstraps left.
In terms of a place to write, how is it for you living there? I mean, did you find that you're able to write better, perhaps, or more?
Well, I've always been very inspired by a sense of place, and like to bring that out in my writing. And so, I think it's imperative that, I had to live in New Orleans to write a New Orleans novel. I wasn't going to succeed at doing that if I didn't live there. And of course, New Orleans is very open and welcoming, you know, open to and welcoming of writers and artists in particular. So there's a nice support community. Certainly we teach in an MFA. So we've surrounded ourselves with writers and graduate students. And so that's a community that really is bolstering.
How long have you, how long do you spend there during the year?
Well, I'm there relatively full time, except when I'm on book tour. So we bought a house at the end of February, and I don't believe we've spent as many days in the house as we have been away traveling due to writing. But in my best dreams, I would be there a lot.
And I guess you and your husband spend a lot of time up here, right?
Yes, yeah, quite a bit of time in Ontario every year.
You mentioned buying a house. Was it important for you after all of this to invest in New Orleans?
Yes, it actually was. And, of course, I think everyone after Katrina had a tough time deciding whether or not they were going to stay. Or is it time to abandon the city, you know, get out while we can? And I'm glad we did. We bought a house in what they call Flood Zone 3. So, used to be an old corner grocery store, a little corner grocery store, and the first portion of it, the back half is raised and it's two stories, but a couple rooms of the home took on 18 inches of water, so we know if the bowl fills up again, which rooms are going to take on water.
But back to the characters in the book, is there a character that, I mean, you mentioned you enjoyed writing about Furious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there a character that you liked, genuinely liked?
I think I loved all of them. Liked maybe not any single one of them so much. I think each has qualities that aren't so respectable and aren't, you know, certainly makes them imperfect. I really like Sharon Harris, Furious's mom, who's always done the best she can, and still she ends up with these kind of cruddy kids, you know, wondering what she did that had this turn out like it did.
Is there a character that you see yourself in?
What's so funny is that I would say I'm in all of them. I think people expect me to identify most closely with Ariel, just because of her race and age and gender, but she is no more a part of me than Cerise, for example, you know, a 76-year-old African-American.
On the idea of what was the name of the hurricane that was supposed to hit this year? I'm trying to remember now.
Gustav,
yeah.
Hurricane Gustav, when it was followed up with Ike, and we actually lost our roof to Gustav and evacuated straight into the eye of the storm that passed over Baton Rouge.
I mean, people must come up to you and say, well, why do you live there? I mean, every, you know, when you're doing this every single hurricane season, it seems.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Floridians, for example, the entire state of Florida has been doing this for, you know, centuries. They're very used to it, and people continue to live in Florida. A sort of an ironic and sad and double K occurrence, though, from this summer when we were teaching in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, I got an urgent email from my father who had told me that my sister, who lives in the middle of Nebraska, their house was hit dead on by a tornado. And I just sort of panicked and found out that somebody's looking out for us. Their house survived. They had about $250,000 worth of damage to the property and outbuildings and stuff, but their house survived because the builder had installed hurricane grade roof clips. So their roof stayed on, and they were okay. They lived from, you know, being hit directly on by a tornado because of some little clip that was designed for hurricanes. So, you know, everybody in California, they get to deal with fires, you know, wildfires and earthquakes. And I found out that here in Vancouver, even earthquakes are a concern. And there's tsunamis. It would be easy for me to say, oh, well, you know, we're just all retarded for, we're just really foolish for living in a city that is prone to flooding and getting hit by hurricanes. But I think that there are natural disasters all over the place. And so, yeah, we continue to choose to live.
It seems that the benefits of living there outweigh the risks, I suppose, right?
Yes. I'm not much of a gambling woman, but I suppose that's true.
Yeah. When you talk about race in the book, now the book only goes up to Hurricane Katrina, right?
Right. In the prologue, from the very first page, essentially what these characters, after having gone through the year that the novel follows, what is coming next for these people.
After Katrina, we heard a lot about the resentment that people had towards the government,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed that the issue of race was exacerbated by the government's response to Katrina.
Absolutely.
Do you think that if something like Katrina happened today or happened again, that the government response would be different? I guess invariably it would.
I think that it would have to be. I think just plain and simple, no matter what party is in power, I don't think America can suffer such amazing humiliation again. I mean, it was insane. Bush waited out a couple days, hanging out, took a trip to California, then finally came to New Orleans. It astounds me.
Now, the book, you wrote the book after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel some sort of responsibility to have this dialogue that you talked about earlier about having to sort of shed light on what it was like before the storm?
In some ways, yes, because that city's gone now, right? And I did write the novel to sort of answer the question, why? Why would people live 6 feet under water, or, you know, I mean, below sea level, and in certain cases, you know, 20 feet of water, you know, people drown in their attics. But why would people stay? You know, I tackled the hurricane, the predecessor of Katrina, that hit about a year before Hurricane Ivan, and the evacuation process, how absurd and ridiculous and horrible and difficult it is to actually evacuate an entire city. And I think that's in some reasons why so many people actually did stay. The absurdity of evacuating, and we had so many times the city or whatever, there was crying wolf all over the place. So we'd go, we'd leave, we'd pack up, nothing happened. We'd come home, you know, we've missed days of work, we've missed our homes, you know, we have to throw out all the food in the refrigerator, and you do this over and over and over again, and then it's like, I have to evacuate again? No, I'm not going to. So I suppose I wanted to answer that why as well.
What's it like being married to a writer?
Oh, I don't think I could be married to anybody else. He understands me and I understand him, and the habits of a writer and what it takes to make it work.
And do you work together?
We do. We're very odd. We've even been told by other writing couples that we're freaks of nature. We actually sit at the very same table, at the same kitchen table, and, you know, across from each other with our little dueling laptops and type away, but, you know, we'll interrupt each other and say, hey, when you get to the end of the sentence, I want to read you this, or I've got a question, or, hey, here, listen to this paragraph.
One would think that the people that work in any job together would provide some tension or some angst.
Mm-hmm.
For you both, it doesn't?
Well, not anymore. I think it would have been enormously difficult if just one of us had been able to succeed at writing, because we met our very first day of graduate school, so we've been on absolutely similar paths, you know, tandem paths, synchronous paths, whatever, and if I had written and never seen the light of the publishing day and just succeeded, I think that would be very difficult, or, you know, vice versa, I think it would be completely different. So we are incredibly fortunate, incredibly lucky to both have found some measure of success at our passion, at our life's passions. This is what we are sort of meant to do.
Has a Giller changed anything? He's been nominated for Giller, correct?
Yes, yeah, no, he's shortlisted. It helps sell books, of course. Three Day Road sold in so many countries, and it was such a big award winner that I think Joseph is able to handle this Giller nomination with a good measure of calm.
It's not competitive at all between the two of you now?
No, well, because I'm not a Canadian, I don't get nominated for any of these awards. it's like, yeah, well, I have to do 26 cities in the next 2 months. How many are you doing? No, it really isn't.
Now, the book goes up to Katrina, as I said. Would you revisit the characters later on?
I am very attached to a couple of them, and I think I probably will. I have not yet decided whether or not it's going to be in this next novel, but they're pretty close to my heart, so I think I probably will come back and hang out with them some more.
And for you as a writer, how important is it for you to read? Do you read?
Perhaps? I read incessantly. I usually have two, if not three, books going at the same time, and, you know, I've got to always get that New Yorker story read. I read all the time.
Is it mainly the sort of stuff that you write as well, or do you read various things?
I must admit, I do not read a lot of nonfiction. I primarily read fiction, and I primarily read contemporary novels. I'll read the occasional historical set novel for sure, but otherwise, I don't really read genre. I don't read mystery. I don't read fantasy. I don't read sci-fi or vampire novels.
Do you watch television?
Yes, I have it depends on the season. Sometimes I won't watch much at all, but I'm a Top Chef junkie, for example. So, yeah, I catch some shows.
This has been quite interesting talking to you about the book and about your city. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
The book, you're very welcome. The book is called Babylon Rolling, $29.95 from Knopf, the author Amanda Boyden here on the Plante Online program. I'm Joseph Plante.